Women on the run from a slave state, refugees from North Korea, are often leaving behind a life of forced labor, prison camps, and starvation. But what kind of life awaits those who escape? All too often, they're trading one kind of slavery for another, ending up as human chattel. Their story brings to light some ugly realities, and Betsy Kawamura, founder of Women for Nonviolence in Peace and Conflict Zones, speaking at UH tomorrow and is with us this morning. This is a very, not in the least, a pretty story, is it? But it's one that's been played out throughout history, Betsy?
Yes, thank you. Good morning to everyone, and I really appreciate the time to be here. Certainly the issues of human trafficking is not a very pretty one. It's not a very beautiful one at all. But I think, you know, one of the biggest reasons I've decided to embark on creating a campaign, awareness campaign, is to remind people of the beauty and the dignity in these women who have survived human trafficking, and to basically to rally them and to empower their voices through various media channels so that these women coming from North Korea who've been human trafficked in China and other parts of Asia will be able to speak about their experiences and contribute to world peace in the Korean peninsula with impact in the rest of the world. That's what I'm hoping to do.
The reason they end up in human trafficking is that they managed to get out of North Korea with nothing, essentially, right?
Absolutely, you're correct. As we said before, these women leaving North Korea, and incidentally, very interesting, statistically, over the last several years, the ratio between men and women leaving North Korea, the women have become much higher. And these women who leave North Korea, they basically leave without anything. North Korean currency is basically worthless in China, any parts of the world. So there was an implicit understanding that, you know, they have prearranged their escape route with human traffickers. And some of these human traffickers can be fellow, you know, defectors or refugees from North Korea, as well as Chinese people on the other side.
How do they manage to operate with, how do these traffickers manage to operate within a very tight authoritarian culture that is North Korea?
Well, it's very interesting. In many corrupt societies, you know, not at least including North Koreans.
In many what?
In corrupt societies.
Corrupt societies.
Yes, corrupt and invisible societies, intransparent societies, bribery does work. So even if you try to create like a total control state, you know, like the soldiers and the prison guards and people in general are not infallible.
So if you come up with a certain amount of money,
yes,
you can get out of North Korea by bribing the right people.
You know, it's not always like 100% secure, you know, formula that you just mentioned, but it does make a difference, absolutely. And so this is the key issue. You know, when many of these women are basically desperate to leave, they will try any means to leave the country. And a lot of the reason is that if they have children and they have family that they're trying to collect food for. So their initial intention might have been going to China temporarily. But what could happen is that, you know, perhaps they might agree to be married, forced married to a Chinese farmer or somebody in the rural areas, because as I said before, you know, the ratio of men to women in China, the one-child policy has created, in other words, a shortage of women. And with incredible boom in the Chinese economy, many of the women are deciding to move into the larger cities.
In an arrangement like the one you describe, there's got to be complicity all the way down the line.
Yes, there is a certain amount of complicity, but I think I need to remind people that nobody in their right mind wants to agree to go through intense amount of domestic violence.
I'm talking about the farmer who buys a wife.
Yes.
That's complicity down the line, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. There is complicity down the line, but, you know, what happens to these women is that they really don't have a choice.
No, understood.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah. You're talking about a very large and powerful economic engine in human trafficking.
Absolutely.
There is profit to be made.
Absolutely.
From the bodies of women escaping from an oppressive dictatorship.
Absolutely.
And there doesn't seem to be anybody helping them at the other end. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, you know, this is a very, very challenging and very frustrating and troublesome aspect you're speaking about. And many of us, including myself, are trying to work very hard in campaign to try to have protection or some kind of rescue for these women. Now, you know, China is very important in this issue. China has signed up to a convention on protecting refugees, signed back in 1951, but they have not upheld this
Evidently.
To protect. Absolutely. They haven't upheld it to protect North Korean women and men who escape into China. And, you know, most of the reason is economic, is because, you know, China does not want a humongous flood of North Koreans coming into China because they are struggling to continue their economic incredible explosive growth. So any kind of potential challenge to create an obstacle against this continued growth is seen as a threat. And so this is one of the sad stories. So, you know, basically there's like a UN Commission of Inquiry right now going into North Korea, well, not going into North Korea, looking at North Korea's incredible human rights atrocities. And of course, you know, at the top of the plate is like the concern of the Chinese government in terms of, you know, forcing them refoulement back into North Korean borders, which usually means imprisonment, torture, implicit, I suppose, imprisonment of, you know, families up to three generations, according to this guilt by association issues.
We know that they're leaving behind an indifferent government, indifferent to their humanity, but it looks as if they're ending up at one at the other end as well, right? If China lets them be shipped back, what's the difference?
Absolutely. But, you know, some of the people, you know, many of the people, as I understand, have had some fortune in being able to go back and forth through the border. The problem is, though, the indifference, you know, as you correctly talk about, doesn't end at China. It often shows up in South Korea, where many of them are hoping to end up in. Once you are in South Korea, you know, you're considered a citizen because you receive a South Korean passport. But that
do they get some help in South Korea?
Absolutely. There's a Hanawon, a 6-month program for integration. But that does not preclude the fact that there is a lot of bullying and stigmatization of North Koreans when they arrive in South Korea. The ones I know who basically resettled far away into Europe, for instance, you know, talk very often about the stigmatization and bullying that goes on, and that's the reason why they had to leave. So it is by no means a perfect system in South Korea.
So there are some real cultural shifts that need to occur at every step down the line.
You're absolutely correct. There's a culture, you know, and there's a mind shift. You know, I think in an extreme like hyper-competitive society like in South Korea, making sure that they don't fall behind China or Japan in their economic growth, there is like a hyper-competitive issue right now. And so, you know, when they see the North Koreans coming in, they see them as like, you know, cogs in a wheel. They say that, you know, why do we have to take care of our, you know, quote unquote, like less intelligent, less motivated and less progressive.
So a lot of cultural prejudice is playing a part in all this.
Absolutely. And this is some of the issues that I will speak about at the University of Hawaii tomorrow.
Well, thanks very much for coming on the show, Betsy. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank
Good
you.
Good to have you. Betsy Kawamura is the founder and director of Women for Nonviolence. It's the host of a roundtable discussion tomorrow afternoon at UH Manoa called The Potential Role of North Korean Refugees in Catalyzing Peace on the North Korean Peninsula. And her work now focuses on those refugees from North Korea. You can learn more about it at hpr2.org.